Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Well, that was bad. My God, those turnovers. We've got to talk about it. You have no choice. It's a Thursday, Locked On Celtics. Milk, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Woo! This is the truth like 34. Yeah. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melody. Hi there, John Corrales here from MassLive.com. I'm their Boston Celtics beat reporter. Here after the Boston Celtics, disappointing. I mean, really disappointing. 112-109 loss to the Miami Heat. They are now down 3-1 in this Eastern Conference Finals. Is it the death knell? No. We just watched the Denver Nuggets win two straight series after going down 3-1. So it's definitely possible. We've seen the Celtics do very well for long stretches throughout this series. But now you got to go out there and win three in a row. And that's going to be incredibly difficult. So the season is teetering on the brink. If this is your first time listening, I am sorry that this is how you get introduced to the Locked On Celtics podcast. But hopefully you find a podcast here that helps you get through a game like this. Regular listeners, thank you for coming back, especially after a loss. Anybody who's listening right now after this loss, I know you're hardcore, so thanks for listening, thanks for rating and reviewing, and thanks for sharing. Normally, the format would have positives in the first segment, negatives in the second segment. I don't know how many positives I'm going to pull out of this, so I'm kind of the format is out. Just kind of talking here about the game in the first couple of segments. And then segment three, I don't know what adjustments can be made, but I know people are overreacting and maybe I can just reset everybody in the third segment. We'll hope. Let's just start with the obvious. Tyler Hero. I mean, what a performance from Tyler Hero. I mean, it's just ridiculous for him to come off the bench and hit 14 of 21, 5 of 10 from 3, perfect from the line, and then to have 3 assists. What's funny is, here's the funny part. Anybody that watched this game knows that Tyler Hero is the reason why they won this game. You watch this and you say, they do not win this at all. Miami gets blown out. Even as poorly as the Celtics played, they get blown out if Tyler Hero scores 15. He scored 37. He carried them. And he was a minus 4. How is that possible? How is he a minus 4? That's insane. But there it is. Tyler Hero, a minus 4. That's just one of the dumbest things I've seen. You know, we talk about in-game plus minus. I mean, that just makes me never want to use it again. Because there's no way you can watch this game and say, oh yeah, Tyler Hero was a negative. He just happened to be on the floor during Celtics runs, probably, and then hit the clutch shots. Anyway, he was 14 of 21. The Celtics could do nothing at all to stop him. I mean, he was driving past Jason Tatum and then flipping a reverse offhand, like, I mean, come on, layup, come on. The way he was carving the Celtics up, it's not like he was just catching and shooting. He was carving the Celtics up. It was kind of embarrassing after a while. But sometimes when a shooter gets going, there's nothing you can do. There's just nothing you can do to stop him. So sometimes you just got to tip your cap. Sometimes you just got to say, like, you beat us. And trust me, that's not my takeaway from all of this, but it is my takeaway with Tyler Hero. The Celtics let him get going, and then he just never stopped. And to Tyler Hero, I say, great game. And you are the reason why Miami won this game and why it's a 3-1 series now. So kudos to you. My big takeaway from the game is the first half, where the Celtics just came out flat. They admitted so after the game. And it just continues the storyline through the playoffs. Brad Stevens on video before the game telling guys to drive. Do not settle. Drive. And what do those guys do? They settle. They don't drive as much. They finally started driving, and they ended up, there was a play early on. They drove it three separate times, and they kicked it out to a corner three from Kemba. But they didn't do it consistently. And then they turned the ball over, which I'll get to. But to come out and play as poorly as they did was just, that's the most embarrassing part. And sometimes it's kind of frustrating for a player. I'm not going to compare myself to a conference finals game, but every player who's played organized sports has been in a game where it's like, why don't we have it? And it's hard to understand that sometimes you just, I don't know, you just don't have it. And they didn't. They just didn't. Brad Stevens said after the game, for whatever reason, we never looked crisp. And that showed itself in our shooting numbers. I thought we were lucky to be 50-44 at halftime. And then I thought we found a nice rhythm. But the first half was just crappy. And, you know, it has me wondering, like, we talk about home court advantage. Is this where the home court advantage really is? Now, this would have been a Miami home game, but does having a home court advantage give teams that kind of boost? Do the Celtics win one of or both of the first two games if they had the home crowd to juice them, to give them a little extra something? I mean, certainly I'm not going to make that as an excuse. It's just more wondering out loud because every team's in the bubble. I mean, this is the bubble. I've heard people say it, it's the great equalizer. You're in this spot where it's, no one sees home court. Like, you got some signage and stuff, but like, no one, it's not, there's no home court. It's just neutral. And I think, I really do think that's why a team like Miami has had the run that it had. If they had to go into Milwaukee, never mind Indiana, but if they had to go into the Garden, would they have had the same kind of runs that they had? I'm looking at how teams react and how bad some teams look, including the Boston Celtics for stretches. And you can't help but think that, man, if you had the Garden crowd behind them, if they had the Garden crowd behind them in game two, do they have a 37-17 third quarter? I don't know. But I don't think so, because you know that these crowds juice these guys up, and you know that they get a little extra boost. And it's very obvious that the Celtics needed an extra boost throughout this series. So one takeaway is home court advantage means something. And that's going to be something to think about in future seasons. Like, it's not an excuse now. Like, everybody's in the same position. So it's not an excuse, but I think what we're learning is when you have the opportunity to get home court versus not get home court, I think it's important to get home court. And you were seeing, like, really the depth of how important that might be. As part of that first half, Jason Tatum scoreless, which I've never seen a guy that good play that poorly. I mean, he just looked like he didn't know how to play basketball. And he was settling. He wasn't attacking the way he should have. He just was not aggressive at all. So, and then he comes out in the second half and scores 28 points over the final 19 minutes. So he had it in him. I mean, shit, if he had played that way in the first half, it would have been a 50-point game. That's how good he was in the second half. And it raises another question, because to start the second quarter, Brad Stevens throws out a lineup of Brad Wanamaker, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, Robert Williams, and Semi Ojeleye. And I was like, what the hell is this lineup doing out there? And it sucked. But the whole second quarter sucked. I mean, that was one of the worst stretches of basketball I've seen in my life. And the only thing I can think, two things, that Brad Stevens really wants to get some of his guys some rest and try to keep them fresh for a fourth quarter run. And if you look at the minutes played, Kemba Walker, remember when I said Kemba Walker's getting fatigued? 34 minutes in this game. It's a crucial game. 34 minutes. 36 for Marcus Smart, just about 40 for Jalen and Jason. So, and Gordon played just about 30, 29 and a half. So part of it is, I think Brad Stevens realizes that these guys are really getting fatigued quickly and they're running out of gas. And the other thing is, was that a lineup designed to get Jason Tatum going where he knew that he had to be the primary scorer? They threw this out there, not this exact lineup, obviously, because Hayward was out, but they threw Tatum and a bunch of bench guys out there against the Sixers, and it worked because everyone was doing their job. And Jason Tatum was like, okay, I'm the scorer now. And I think, and I didn't get to ask this question, but I think it might have been Brad Stevens saying, we need something to get Tatum going. And if we don't give him anybody to pass to, and he has to be the guy to go out there and do all of the scoring, then maybe he can be aggressive and get to the rim. That's my only thought on that lineup. Why else would he throw that lineup out there other than to preserve some minutes? But I think you could have done it with a better lineup than that. I have to believe that Brad Stevens was trying to get something out of Jason Tatum there, and it didn't work. It didn't work in the first half. Tatum woke up in the second half, but it wasn't enough. It just wasn't enough. By that time, Hero was already on his way, and the Celtics just could never get it going. Not until desperation time. Turnovers, big, big problem. The best five lineup, a big, big problem. But maybe something that could help the Celtics. All of that coming up next. I also have something that could help you if you're a car owner, and it's called rockauto.com. Okay, everybody's got to go through maintenance. Everybody's got to go through repairs if you own a car. Something as simple as windshield wipers, something bigger like brakes or whatever. If you're a do-it-yourselfer and you can replace some of the parts in your car, don't bother going to one of those chain stores or one of the strip malls. You know the ones that I'm talking about, because they're not going to have all of the parts that you want or need in stock, which means they're going to probably have to order you something anyway. So just avoid the trip, avoid the hassle, save yourself time. Most importantly, save yourself some money, because rockauto.com's prices are reliably low and they're the same for everybody. Professionals aren't going to catch an extra deal, and do-it-yourselfers aren't going to pay a little extra. So go to rockauto.com. They have the lowest prices possible. Those prices do not change based on what the market will bear. It's a family business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. So again, for you advanced people or people like me who can do small things like replace my wipers and fix a tail lamp and motor oil and whatever, like that little stuff, still go to rockauto.com, because they're going to give you the best price, and you're going to save a lot of time. So go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. And here's the most important part for me. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. That's going to be a big help. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. I will start this segment by reading a tweet from Sean Grandy, who is the radio play-by-play guy for the Boston Celtics. And he says, zero consolation, but it's statistically remarkable that the Celtics have now lost 6 of 9 and have the NBA's second best net rating and third best scoring margin in that span. What's happening? 92 turnovers in the 6 losses. A bad clutch team or unlucky, we'll find out Friday. 92 turnovers in 6 losses. Wow. I mean, wow. And you look at the stats, because he tweeted out the stats. Their scoring differential, there's still a positive scoring differential. Their offensive rating is 109.7. Now, their defensive rating is not great at 107.1, but it's still a 2.5-point net rating. Their field goal percentage is actually higher in the last 9 games than it was in the first 6 games, although their 3-point shooting was better. But the big thing is, in third quarters, they're minus 29 in the last 9 games, but 92 turnovers in 6 losses. I mean, just lost 6 of 9. Yeah, right, 6 losses. Whew. I can't even keep my thoughts straight after that. The turnovers in this one, 7 turnovers in the fourth quarter. Marcus Smart, 3 turnovers down the stretch. And these weren't just turnovers. And they weren't just live ball turnovers, which is bad enough. It's bad enough when you have a turnover and it goes to the other team. If you don't know, live ball turnover, basically dribble it off your foot and it goes to another team. And the other team can pick it up and go live ball. It's a live ball. You've turned it over. Live ball turnovers are obviously the worst because they can start fast breaks. They can start transition opportunities, and they are the impetus for runs. They weren't just live ball turnovers. They were passes directly into the hands of Heat players. Just directly right to them. Which blows my mind. How can they just... A guy is standing there, and you're going to throw it up over his head. Like, he's not just going to jump a little bit and steal that? There's no effort to create a passing lane? And, okay, we talk about going to the middle of the zone. Well, the Celtics can get to the middle of the zone. They tried to get the ball to the middle of the zone, and they couldn't do it over the top. Well, just dribble off to the side and attack from the side and get it in that way. I cannot understand how a zone defense is so problematic for a team. An NBA team facing a zone defense that, okay, so they put the bigs up top. Great. Like, we all know the bigs are up top. You've prepared for the bigs to be up top. Why is it? Why can't the Celtics just attack gaps in the zone? Why can't they just... And they did it. That's the problem, is they did it in the fourth quarter. They did it when they needed to come back. They finally drove against the zone. They finally attacked the gaps. You can get by. You're a guard in the NBA, and you've got bigs up at the top. You can get by him. You can get by Andre Iguodala. You can dribble past him. I don't understand why it takes so much effort, or not even effort. That's the wrong word. Why it takes so many times ramming your head against the wall for a team to say, oh, wait a minute, we can do this other thing. I'm flummoxed by it. And you'd say, well, is it the coaching? I don't, the coach isn't the one out there. The coach isn't the one throwing the ball directly into the hands of the other team. The coach isn't the one trying to dribble, like, yeah, attack the gaps, but like if there's no gap to it, like if they're just pinched between you, you can't just try to dribble between. Like, if there's no gap there, swing the ball and have the next guy attack an actual gap. This isn't high school. At some point, the coaches can only do so much. I cannot sit here and tell you what they prepared and what the game plan is, but these are all very good coaches. Okay? Brad Stevens is a very good coach. So are all the assistant coaches. They've gone through all of this stuff. I can sit here and I can break things down. I go onto masslive.com and break things down. And you know what? I compare it to high school science teacher versus, you know, the Stephen Hawking's of the world, the theoretical physicists of the world. And that's what the NBA coaches are. Spoelstra, Stevens, Vogel, like all those guys. Even the ones who you think aren't good, they're good. Okay? You got to be genius level to be at that level, to be in the NBA. So, yeah, I'm the guy, I'm the basketball version of the guy that can help you build a volcano for your science fair. You know, I can get you to a certain point. I can teach you high school physics. But these guys know all of the stuff that I'm saying. And tons more. And yet they're still not doing the basic things. So some of the responsibility falls onto everybody, but on the court, it's the players. It's the players. They have to be the ones who execute. They're the ones making decisions. They're the ones making the passes. They're the ones deciding to shoot. They're the ones deciding to dribble certain places. They're trying to execute a game plan, but they're the ones making decisions in the moment. I just can't believe some of the decisions that they're making. Now, one positive, or not positive, I don't want to say it like that. One thing that could help the Celtics, Bam Adebayo did hurt his left hand. And he spent, it happened late in the game with, I want to say, like a minute or so to go, somewhere in that range. And he was not using that left hand. And if that left hand is a problem, if it's hurt, if he's out for any stretch, or if he's limited for any stretch, that is, that benefits the Celtics, obviously. And to be clear, no one's rooting for an injury. No one is rooting for an injury, but injuries happen. The Celtics played the first two games without Gordon Hayward. They played the last two games with him, but still not full Gordon Hayward. So injuries are a part of this. And if Bam Adebayo has an injury, he's one of the guys that carved up that best five lineup. And I said it here. I said it on Mass Live. That best five lineup would not work again against Bam Adebayo. And you try to use it down the stretch. I think that was a mistake. I think they should have used it during non-Bam minutes. That's what I said here. That's what I said on Mass Live. If they're going to use that best five lineup, it's not going to work against Bam Adebayo again. It did for a stretch, not again. That was a lucky stretch. They're prepared for it now. Even when the Celtics were switching the dribble handoffs, what I tell you was going to happen? Fake the handoff and dive to the basket. He did it right away, like the third possession of the game. So, but if Bam is out, then that's going to really help the Celtics. Then they can get to that best five lineup if he's out or if he plays less or whatever. So keep an eye on what that injury is, and we'll see. Obviously, I'm hoping for Bam Adebayo to not be hurt. But if he is, then that's part of the game. All right, I've said a lot. I feel like I've said a lot without saying much. I'm going to try to say a little bit more about just the reaction to this game when the Locked On Celtics podcast returns. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify. So I'm sure emotions are running high amongst Celtics fans. This feels like an opportunity, a missed opportunity, though it's still not over. Like I said, Denver did it twice, and Boston has been so good for so much of the series, but not good enough. Is it possible that backs against the wall, they can win three straight games? Sure. Does it look like they're capable of it? No, it does not. But we've seen, again, teams not look capable of something, then suddenly look very capable of something. Things change. So the first thing I want to say is, I hate to put it, you know, I don't even know what the word is I'm looking for. But when I say it's not over till it's over, the cliche, that's true. And Brad Stevens had the right attitude, I think, after the games. Like, look, we got to win on Friday. And that's it. We're not going to win three games on Friday. We've just got to win one. And then it's 3-2. And then you just got to win the next game. And then you go from there. But they have one game to win. And that's going to be their focus. There's no adjustment to me. They know all of the things. At this point, everybody knows everything that can be done. And sure, the Heat tried a little something different. They didn't play Kelly Olynyk at all in this game. We saw 4 minutes of Solomon Hill out of nowhere. But they didn't play Derek Jones. They didn't play Kendrick Nunn. They didn't play Olynyk. So those were guys that were getting minutes. And they went heavy with Jimmy Butler. They went heavy with Goran Dragic, obviously Tyler Hero, and then Iguodala. I mean, that's a 7-man rotation. So the Celtics have all the information that they're going to have. They know everything that they're going to do. They can throw some wrinkles out there. They used Robert Williams, which seemed to work out fairly well. I thought he did okay. They barely used Grant Williams. He got a 46-second stretch. So it's a back and forth. But I don't think there are any new moves. It's a matter of which old moves are these guys going to use. So these teams are prepared. It's just a matter of execution. And so what happens? What happens if the Celtics lose and they go down to the Heat? Is it a missed opportunity to get to the finals? Sure, absolutely. You have an opportunity against a team that you know that you've played better than, but not for long enough. And in all the analysis of everywhere I've heard and read, I think there's a general consensus. The Celtics have the better talent, but the lapses are too big. Miami plays hard all the time, and they're making more of the clutch plays. And so Miami's winning. So if the Celtics lose, I would say, and I've been having conversations with people about this before I recorded the show, I would say that it's you're going to go through your emotions. I'm not going to tell you how to be a fan. You go through your emotions. People are going to lose their minds. People are going to, I don't know if they're going to go Jaylen Brown flipping tables, but there's going to be an initial wave of, oh my God, missed opportunity. This sucks. These guys don't have it. Blah, blah, blah. I see people saying that Brad Stevens should go. No, that's not going to happen. He just signed an extension. He's not going anywhere. But I would say that hopefully if they do lose, that we can look at this season and understand in the grand scheme of things that this is a team that is on the upswing. And hopefully there is a little more linear growth. It's not always like that. But with this same team next year, I mean, this team's basically coming back next year. Who's not? Jaylen Brown's beginning an extension. Jason Tatum is going to sign an extension this summer. Daniel Tice is on a $5 million non-guaranteed contract that they're certainly going to pick up. Smart is under contract. Obviously, they just signed Kemba Walker. Robert Williams is under contract. Hayward is going to come back one way or another, I think, because there's no way he's going to opt out of $34 million to go somewhere else. I doubt that that's going to happen. I don't think there's going to be enough money out there. And with the summer of 2021 or whatever that offseason is, in the offing, no team's going to commit to Gordon Hayward long term. So he's going to stick around. Grant Williams is going to be here. So who else might? We're talking about Brad Wanamaker and Semi Ojeleye and Enes Kanter, Javonte Green, Carson Edwards. Those are the guys that are going to probably be gone or potentially gone. But the entire core of this team, barring a surprise trade, is coming back. Your two core players are 22 and 23. Marcus Smart is 27. Kemba's getting a little older. Gordon's getting a little older. But they're still young enough to be in the tail ends of their prime. It's a young team that's going back to the conference finals now. And that, we hope, at least stays alive for a couple more games. And hopefully can come back and win the series. You never know. But if they lose, I think proper perspective, and just, I'm saying this just to kind of like gear your heads, hopefully, towards the bigger picture that, yeah, this is a missed opportunity for sure. And there's reason to be upset because this team did not live up to expectations, at least in the moment. But it did, honestly, live up to. No one thought this was going to be a championship team this year. And it didn't go the way we thought it would. But coming into the season, everybody thought, hey, you know what? I think this team's ceiling is conference finals. And here we are in the conference finals. So this team has achieved its expectation. It's just that the expectations were kind of revised now that the Miami Heat are here. If this is the Milwaukee Bucks, and this was happening, people are like, yeah, you know what? It's cool. You lose to Milwaukee, you're supposed to lose to Milwaukee. And you're just not supposed to lose to the Miami Heat. But this isn't the fifth seed Miami Heat. This is a different Miami Heat team that has grown and is, frankly, kind of tailored for this bubble environment. This is, you can laugh at Heat culture all you want, but they are disciplined and they are mentally strong. And that goes a long way in this bubble. We've seen it. I hate to give a ton of credit to what's become an overplayed marketing gimmick, but fact is that they are mentally strong. They are a very mentally tough team. And when Brad Stevens before the season said, got to find your joy, and the team that does is going to have a great chance of standing at the end, this is kind of exactly what he was talking about. The Miami Heat, mentally strong. And the Celtics, maybe not quite as much. And that's it. That's on everybody. But in the end, this young team full of 20-something-year-olds is going through this entire experience, and they've mostly stayed together even after the Game 2 explosion. I think that while disappointing, I don't think it's not a success if they go out in Game 5. It's not great. It's not how we wanted it to go. But I have people talking to me about, like, oh, they blew it. Oh, they, you know, something's not clicking. Like, no, this is just how it goes sometimes. So we'll see what happens in Game 5. I'll tell you this, as far as podcast schedule goes, if they lose Game 5, I'm not going to be in a rush to do a podcast for that Saturday. I think I'm just going to save it for the Monday podcast. If they win Game 5, I'll give you a bonus podcast. But if they don't, then we'll just take a day off. And I don't think anybody's going to want to listen to me talk anyway. I don't think anybody wants to listen to me talk anymore right now. But that's going to be my plan. So the Celtics on Thursday will have a practice or whatever on Friday, Game 5. If they win, I'll give you a Saturday podcast. If they lose, then we move on to the offseason, and I'll go back to my Monday through Friday schedule. So if you're new, subscribe. If you find it enjoyable, if you find the podcast enjoyable, if you're a regular listener, please give me that 5-star rating and that good written review. It'd be really helpful. I always appreciate those. And share the podcast. Tell everybody that they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.